I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, welcome to another episode of the Red, White and Buffalo Blues with Robin, myself, Matt, and my special guest, the star of the playbook, Mr. Emery Hunt. Emery, thank you ever so much for joining me on the show, joining us on the show.
No, I appreciate you guys having me on, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Obviously, most people probably have heard of you, and obviously, we just talked just now, just before coming on. Obviously, you do a lot of work on there, and you've got your scouting guides on there. How did it really come about for you and all this, and obviously, where you've grown the football game plan, which is your baby in a way, from where it was to where it is now?
Yeah, man. Listen, I started footballgameplan.com as a website in 2007. And in 2009, we did the quick, slow pivot to video. We were one of the first ones to jump out on YouTube back in 2009 when nobody was doing it. So we kind of developed a following there, a significant following, because we were putting out previews for each NFL team, you know, every game. Giving everybody the same equal amount of time. We did it for college football, women's tackle football. At the time, NFL, Europe, we were talking about that on the website, but on YouTube, we was doing it for everybody. And in 2011, we started doing podcasting before anyone was doing podcasting. And so it was cool to kind of get out in front of a lot of different new mediums that we know now to be normal. And that's kind of how the base grew. And then, you know, I want to say 2010, maybe we start to do like really just do like draft grades and grade the drafts and grade prospects. And I would say we started to get a significant following for it. And then in 2020, I just decided when, you know, like everybody, COVID had us locked down in the house. I was like, OK, now I can put out a digital guide because I wanted to give a little bit more meat to the grades I was putting out on YouTube in terms of like, here's my top quarterbacks. And instead of just having a number on the side with no real explanation, you know, even though I have written notes, I was like, let me just put that in a digital form and put that out there. So 2020 was the first digital guide. And then things just kind of blew up there from a draft guide perspective. But in the middle of that, I'm calling college games. I'm working at CBS, you know, getting opportunities there. And so it's like, to say someone really started from a website to YouTube to where I am now is kind of crazy. It's remarkable to see.
And I would recommend everyone, when obviously would ask Emery where to find all the stuff, to download and actually purchase his draft guide. I've got it for the last few years, and the amount of work he puts in, and even on his YouTube channels, I always loved it when you were talking about best fits and you're going lower than the FBS level, so Division 2, Division 3 and all that. And this guy is a fountain of knowledge and is a pleasure to actually to follow. So we really appreciate it. And obviously we're here to talk about the Bills and just want to get your view on the Bills offseason so far. Obviously we've had a lot of moves and going from almost an experience to a youth movement. Just want to get your thoughts as an analyst on how the offseason's gone.
Well, obviously you got to start at receiver where, you know, you lose Gabe Davis. The moving off of Stephon Diggs now puts a big spotlight on, okay, well, they have to really improve or, you know, increase the talent at receiver. But I felt like everywhere else, Buffalo, you know, pretty solid team. The run game is where it needs to be, you know, defensively. I thought they added some good pieces depth wise. So they still bolstered their depth defensively. I feel like secondary is going to be fine. I know they brought in Mike Edwards. I like him as a player. You lose Jordan Poyer. So they've done a solid job of really plugging up depth holes. So now when you talk about going into a draft, you don't when you do that, you kind of help yourself out by not being desperate. And so it's kind of like going to the grocery store on a full stomach. So you're not just going to grab everything, right? You're going to get exactly what's on that menu, on that list that you wrote at home. You're not going to go in there and grab Oreos over here or this because you're hungry. You're going to go in there and get exactly what you need, and you're going to walk out. So I feel like what they did in the offseason and free agency, now they can go in a draft and get the best player available and preferably, more than likely, double up on wide receiver.
Yeah.
Should we get the big question out of the way? We've had a few draft conversations with a few people on the show, Emery. And I'm not going to use any bad language, but I wanted to go up and get a serious MF, Melon Farmer, to there seems to be sort of three schools. It's like, do you go up to get one of the big three, or, you know, are there, do you stay put and maybe hope for a Mitchell or a Murphy to go, or maybe you trade back? What's your first sort of instinct about what they should do? Go for a real top tier player, or maybe hang on for two, maybe not quite as excellent, but still very useful?
Well, it's a unique issue for Buffalo because it's such a glaring need now at wide receiver, but because of how far they go in the playoffs, they're picking really low. And it's unique in the draft because this year you expect quarterbacks to have an early run. So you may see three, maybe four quarterbacks go within the first five or six picks. The problem for Buffalo is that who's going to start the receiver run? Because we could see a run at tackle start early as well. But the problem is, you look at the Cardinals could go receiver. The Giants and Chargers could also go receiver. So that takes away, let's say, three of the super elite type talents, right? So now you're already dealing with, who's in the next tier of excellent receiver? The good part is this is a good crop of receivers in this class. And you get a bit of a break at picks 11, 12, and 13, I believe, because you're thinking of the Vikings, the Raiders, and the Broncos all need quarterbacks. And then by that time, maybe see a couple of defensive players go off. So you still could be within striking distance of getting a guy that's going to be a day one player for you at receiver. I truly believe someone like Keon Coleman should still be there for Buffalo. I like his game a lot. Therefore, you don't have to go up and reach. And listen, if they were pick 15, I say you have a little bit more wiggle room to go up and trade up to go and get a guy. But where they're picking, you kind of want to just sit tight and let's see who's going to be the best available receiver in a pretty deep and talented class. You'll still come out on top.
Continue to take put. But obviously, most people actually in mocks, obviously mock Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, Ladd McConkey to the Bills at 28. Obviously, people now with the Diggs thing, obviously get them trading up, obviously as high as Chicago, as low as probably Jacksonville and all that. With Worthy, I know he's been mocked quite a bit. Obviously, 4.1, 4.2, 40. Speedy guy. Is it with him and likes of Troy Franklin just the weight, especially in the NFL, that's actually going to be holding back a tiny bit? No doubt that they're borderline first, second round picks, but they're, what was it, about what, 167, 178 pounds each, and just trying to get them physicality against these cornerbacks. Would that hurt their stock, or would they be a fit for the Bills?
They could technically be a fit. I mean, at the end of the day, if weight is the biggest concern, that's a easy concern. I mean, that's an easy win. You can gain weight. We could put weight on. That's not a problem. And, you know, when you think about the type of skill set they have, Worthy is someone I feel like has a little bit more inside-outside flexibility. So does Ladd McConkey. You also brought up Troy Franklin. He's someone that's more of a vertical stretch guy. But also has that explosive speed that can get deep down the field. Right now, they need someone who can essentially be their bona fide number one, because you bring in Curtis Samuel. He's kind of a jack of all trades type guy. And I feel like if you go Worthy, you kind of replicating efforts in that regard.
Yeah.
Franklin gives you kind of a Z, you know, a guy that can you put on the move and then you get him down the field vertically. A.D. Mitchell would be great because I feel like he's like CeeDee Lamb. He's someone that you can count on being your number one. Josh Allen's a heck of a lot better than Quinn Ewers. So he's going to get the football more than he did at Texas, because he was open a lot on film at Texas, just couldn't get him the football. So if I had to rank them by, let's say, you know, fit for Buffalo, it would probably go A.D. Mitchell. Then you're looking at Troy Franklin and then Ladd McConkey slash Xavier Worthy. So I feel like Buffalo needs a bona fide stud on the outside, someone that's going to command coverage. And I think Mitchell will give them that if they're able to be within striking distance.
I think one name I forgot as well was obviously Brian Thomas Jr. Mm-hmm. I think he's one that most Bills fans outside the top three really want Bills to see. I mean, he does seem the whole prototypical fit, the size, speed, and height wise on there. I'm assuming that obviously he's your wide receiver four, or has he got a different ranking system to some of the other draft guys?
Yeah, as well as, you know, I rank receivers by how, you know, what position I think they'll play or which they'll be best fit at, right? Because you can't grade Randy Moss and Cole Beasley the same because they'll play two different positions, right? So Brian Thomas is one that, hey, he's a bona fide X, I feel like. And what's unique about Brian Thomas, and people just think the size and, you know, he's just a vertical threat, like he's a catch and run guy too. So you can give him a short pass and he does a great job after the catch. So Brian Thomas, A.D. Mitchell, like I said, I threw out the CeeDee Lamb comparison. So that tells you also he's another one that's a good catch and run guy. So you could get guys that have explosive speed, that have the ability to get deep, but also have the ability to take a short pass a long way. And if you're Buffalo, if you're able to, you know, grab one of those Brian Thomas's, A.D. Mitchell's before you dive into, because you can get slot guys, you can get, you know, a couple of Z receivers at any point in the draft, but the pickings for your bona fide X receivers, you kind of want to grab them right away.
Yeah.
What's the chances that Thomas is there at 28? I mean, are you counting on him falling? Are you counting on perhaps other teams just having other priorities? Because from what I've seen, he seems to be kind of a top 20, maybe low, you know, an 18, 19, 20 sort of guy. It looks like the Bills might have to give something up just to try and move up, I don't know, five, six places. Hope he's still there. Try and make a call.
Well, that's why I always find the draft conversations hilarious when people speak in absolutes, because it's like, who knows, right? You never know when the run of a certain position is going to start. And we've seen teams take – we've seen players of, you know, coming out from the same team, and we expect, let's say, a Jamison Williams to go first, and then a Henry Ruggs go before him. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So. You can see a situation where Brian Thomas could go before Malik Nabers, right? Who knows, right? Anything can happen on draft day if teams value differently. That's why, you know, you got to have your eyes open to a bunch of different prospects. So what happens in this draft industrial complex that we see is the fact that everyone now has these mock draft machines. And if they mock something, you know, a lot of times they start to believe that that's going to be true. But, you know, you never really know. You know, what if you get a situation where, and this is not going to happen, but what if you get a situation where you get 10 straight offensive linemen go? Now, all of a sudden, you got a great problem because you got a chance of really, oh, wow, like here's, you know, six elite prospects at our disposal, right? But you could also have a case where receivers go from pick four to pick nine. You could literally get that many receivers in a row. Tennessee could potentially use a receiver, if not offensive lineman. So can the Chargers, right? And then you look at, you know, the Bears right there at pick nine. They could technically go wide receiver too, you know?
Yeah.
So it's hard to really speculate. That's why I tell people, try to prepare for at least 5 to 7 options. So therefore, if you have grades on, okay, these guys, like I guess now people call them tiers. If you have them in certain tiers, like, okay, these are guys I would target first before we move on to something else. Or if you feel like you can't get up to get one of those elite players, how about this scenario? How about you take that pick 28 and you give it to the Bengals for T. Higgins? You know, you still have options. You know, it may not be in the form of a rookie. It may be in the form of a known asset, and we've seen teams do that before. with the Eagles getting AJ Brown, with you know, the Rams giving up their first round pick to get other known assets and just nail the back end of the draft. So Buffalo still has some options. There'll be some teams that'll be enticed by that first round pick if they want to get a need. You give that up, get a known player at receiver, and they go, you problem solved.
Yeah. Obviously, do you foresee, obviously, if they don't go wide receiver, any other need? If they decide there's a like a Worthy or a Mitchell on the board, do you actually see, and I know we've, I've seen some chat in our group chats about this, them like deviating and maybe going to another position at 28? If could you see it?
If one of those elite pass rushers are there, take them. You know, because Von Miller can't play forever, you know, and why not if a Jared Verse, for whatever reason, is there, or a Leiatu Latu has fallen because people worry about his medicals, take him. You know, you can't have enough elite pass rushers, especially looking at it from Buffalo's perspective in the AFC, which is crowded right now
with
elite quarterback play. So you got to be able to get to those guys. So, you know, if you're finding, hey, okay, we're going to punt on receiver and try to do something else at that position or try to beef up elsewhere, edge rusher would be perfect.
Yeah. I think I also had a chat with a guy in our group chat. We were talking about the centers. Could you see, you could obviously see Jackson Power Johnson and potentially Zach Frazier going on there. Do you see that as a need? Obviously, the Bills have come out and said that McGovern is their starting center. Could it be the smokescreen? And could you see a Jackson Power Johnson or Zach Frazier? Obviously, Frazier with his wrestling background, obviously really, really speaks to McDermott being a wrestler himself. But do you see any of those two potentially being in play, or do you think they would go for either the pass rusher or the pass catcher?
Well, with the way Buffalo ran the ball last year and, you know, how they looked running football, center may not be as big of a need as people think it is. And it also depends on where they have these guys ranked. Like, what if they have Tanner Bordellini ranked ahead of those guys? What if they have, you know, this player ranked ahead of those guys? So that's always in play. Again, if I feel like I've seen Jackson Powers Johnson talked about a lot, probably because of the mock draft machines, and he's a good player. And, you know, the thing is, like, and I'm big on making sure your guard center guard is excellent because that's where offense happens. But Buffalo ran the ball rather well last year. And so I think if anything, you know, you may look out at tackle. If it's hard to say if one of the elite tackles fall, that won't happen. But, you know, Buffalo is really looking at, hey, we got to get better at receiver. You know, maybe we can get a corner if an elite guy falls. You know, if everybody goes offense crazy with tackles and receivers and quarterbacks, and now we're sitting here at pick 28 and for whatever reason, Cooley McKinstry is sitting there or someone like that. It's like, you know what, man, let's get more talent at corner or at edge rusher or maybe even a linebacker. You know, maybe they may say, hey, you know what, man, like, why not get Jeremiah Trotter Jr.? You know, get another one that's a good guy on both ends of defense that can cover, that can play the run. Just keep getting better on, you know, make our strength even stronger, so to speak.
Yeah. I think one guy I spoke to on our previous show, we were talking about defensive backs and all that. And one guy I quite like now is Max Melton, the cornerback out of Rutgers. Where do you actually have him ranked? And obviously, is he a fit, and what's your overall take on him?
He's one of my top corners. And legitimately, I think he may be one or two in terms of like field corner, boundary corner. I don't know off the bat, but I know he's up there. And, you know, it's one of those situations where you can't go wrong with a Greg Schiano coach defensive back. These dudes tend to come out playing exceptionally well. They're feisty. They're aggressive. They got fantastic instincts. Their technique is where it needs to be. Melton is someone that can mirror and match with the best of them and does a great job in playing the ball, attacking the ball, great ball awareness, very good open field tackler. So he is, he should be there, to be honest. You know, and that could be another way to pivot if one of the big dogs at receivers are not there. So again, it's about making your strength stronger. We know they got Benford out there. I like what I saw from Elam in the playoffs. You know, hopefully he continues to come around, and because I was really high on him as well. So you know, there's options for Buffalo, and Melton is another one that would be good.
Yeah, and we're talking about it. Obviously, what we're mainly going to talk about is obviously day three picks. Because no, regardless of whether we trade up or stay where we are, it's more likely that we're going to have quite a few day three picks for the Bills. Is there any positions that are, well, obviously we know that wide receiver is probably the deepest. The sneaky needs like for Bills, like defensive tackle, linebacker, any guys really in the 5 and 6 range? Because we know Bean loves those picks with Davis 4, Shakir 5, Benford in the 6th round, Dane Jackson in the 7th. He finds those hidden gems. And is there any really that you actually could see be the perfect fit for the Bills in the later rounds?
How about that running back? You know, what if Isaiah Davis is there out of South Dakota State? You know, at 6 feet, 220, you know, someone that can play all three downs, someone that can definitely come in and handle RB2 duties, right? You know, he did that as a freshman early in his career when he was backing up Pierre Strong at South Dakota State and had a fantastic national championship game against Sam Houston. So he would be someone that, you know, or that position could be in play on day three for Buffalo to help pair up with a James Cook, you know, someone that gives you a little bit more juice as a backup, someone that can come in and handle receiving duties. You know, you look at someone like Jaden Sherton, the explosive back out of Monmouth. Receiver you talked about is so deep. You know, there's some good day three options there. Should be some good day three options there. I want to throw out a small school name in Kyle Sheets out of Slippery Rock, 6'3", 222, high 4.4, low 4.5, great vertical stretch option. Kind of has that Gabe Davis build, and what they have, and he would be one of those big physical receivers that you could kind of put on the outside, but also can play a little bit of that tight inside receiver, more like a you know, what we call the inside position. Even someone like Tajon Palmer out of UAB, another big body wide receiver. Joshua Cephas out of UTSA. He had a great all-star game circuit. Played at the Hula Bowl, did really well there. Then also did a great job at the East-West Shrine Bowl. So, you know, and if you're looking at defensive line, I'm a big fan of McKinley Jackson, nose tackle of Texas A&M. Just fantastic hand strength, you know, ability to really, you know, anchor down and collapse a pocket. So I think day three is where teams really make their drafts. And if Buffalo is doing things the right way, and we've seen them sort of draft really well, to be honest. Otherwise, they wouldn't have as much depth as they do.
Yeah.
They would they would really – this is the type of draft where you can really ace day three.
Yeah. I think
– oh, sorry. Go on.
No, go on. Go on.
No, I was just going to ask a question about safeties, because you made the point there, Emery, about the Bills. Actually, in a funny way, probably draft better in the fourth, fifth, sixth round. They've kind of missed on a couple in the first and second rounds, but actually they tend to have a slightly higher hit rate. I wanted to ask about the safety position, particularly as it pertains to day three, because one of the things you say about McDermott, or I would say about McDermott, is that coaching up players in the safety and cornerback plays, that seems to be sort of McDermott's bread and butter. It's what he's done so well, what he did so well at Carolina. Can you think of any kind of safety or maybe even cornerback that's that kind of unpolished diamond in the rough that you might be able to, that they might be able to take a raw talent in that 6th, 7th round and really turn into somebody in a sort of year 2, year 3 kind of thing, someone who can sit behind who we have at the moment and just and bring through?
Well, you look at versatility on day three, you know, can you do more than one thing? Marcus Banks out of Mississippi State, you know, I graded as a slot corner, but he was also a starter at a safety for Mississippi State, so he can kind of play both. And when you're thinking about how Buffalo was able to have success with those defensive backs they had, it was that they were interchangeable. When they had the Micah Hyde and Jordan Poirier, those dudes could play, you know, anywhere, right? Like you could just, some days they may be out there covering receivers. Some days they just be playing deep third or on a hash, right? So you want guys that can do multiple things. You lose Saron Neal, you know, it was a big cog on special teams, but also, you know, someone that was able to match up a little bit in certain situations. Sanusi Kane of Purdue is another one of these matchup type safeties. Strong safety by definition, but has the athleticism and a twitch to match up. I'm a big fan of Thomas Hopper, the combo safety out of Notre Dame. He's my number one combo safety, so he can, you know, play down in the slot. Gives you, you know, good coverage ability against bigger receivers and tight ends, but also keeps you strong on the perimeter run game because of his ability to play in the alley. So this is a very good, you know, safety class. I like this class a lot. I know a lot of people say the safety class isn't, you know, good. I disagree. There's a lot of versatility out there. Sean Preston at Mississippi State, another very good Bulldog corner. So defensive back who was a technical free safety by trade, but another one of these guys that you know, because things are so interchangeable now, a lot of these safeties can actually hold their own in one-on-one and do a great job.
Yeah. Is safety a slightly undervalued position, do you think, in the sort of modern NFL? Because we spoke to a few people in it. The sense it's maybe getting a little bit like the running back of the defense somehow, that they'll get guys in for a few years and then, you know, swap them out. Or do you think that is the position evolving? Is it changing? Do you think?
I think people, you know, it's funny because right now, if you can get 3 to 4 years out of a player on your team, kudos to you, right? Because we've seen teams move off quarterbacks. We've seen teams move off running backs. We've seen teams move off receivers. So, like, no one lasts 5 to 8 years on a team anymore, right? So you want to get guys that you feel like can play, because everybody's just trying to get cheaper, younger, you know, and that's what the draft is for. So, I mean, we used to say, oh, this guy, you get this guy, your insert position here for a decade plus. Like, those days are gone, man. Like, you know, it just better be thankful he's good for you this season. You know, if you get somebody that's good for you this season, kudos. I feel like the safety position and any position, those that hate on the running back position love to hate on that position until it's the playoffs and they're like, man, we need to be able to run the ball. Like, duh, you know, so that's what happens. And I feel like every position on that football field, even extending out to kickers, punters, and coverage units, that's extremely valuable. So, yes, the safety position is never going anywhere. It's actually evolving and is becoming more important to have guys that can help you out on both ends of defense.
Yeah. I think we spoke with ex-Bills quarterback Marlon Kerner on the last show. Obviously, there's difference. Obviously, he says it's easier for cornerbacks to transition to safeties and all that rather than safeties actually transitioning to cornerback due to schematics and all that. There's one name that I actually saw him in the I think it was the East West Shrine Game. I know you cover those quite a lot. Of Alabama State, Mikey Victor. Obviously, they list him as a corner. Is there any transferable skill for him to be a safety?
He would transition probably more to what we consider a combo safety, but play primarily in the alley. If you worry about his twitch in terms of being able to turn and run with receivers downfield. But if you think about this from a game day matchup perspective where, okay, this team has an athletic tight end, boom, you throw Mikey Victor on him because he can get physical with him, you know, beat him up at the line of scrimmage, but also he can run with a tight end. He can cover a tight end. So now you take away that option for an offense, and without sacrificing a safety, without sacrificing your number one corner, you got a guy that has natural cover skills, but is physical enough to play, you know, the banging side with him, and kind of sort of take him away or make things difficult for him and help out your defense. So yeah, he would be someone that if he's transitioning to safety, he would be more of your combo guy that could play down in the alley.
Yeah. And another name, which he's got an interesting backstory, and is Quantes Stiggers. I mean, he's the raw prospect, but you've seen, and that's again, the small school, the Shrine Games and all that, he did explode on that. Is he more your developmental guy, or do you think he's one that could actually eventually forge out a decent career as a defensive back, as a cornerback?
I think he's been underrated. You know, I feel like he is someone that could go earlier than people think. How often can you say we got a rookie that has pro experience? And this guy played like 18 games already, you know, as a pro, and won all rookie as all CFL as a rookie. He was rookie of the year up there. So he has pro experience. He goes to the All-Star game as a pro and dominates the competition there. No surprise, because he just came off of pro season. Yeah. And so he ran 4.4, jumped real high, has good size at 5'11", 207. I think teams may look at him and say, hey, man, we get someone that has pro experience, is still technically raw, and has good athleticism. We probably should grab him now. I know teams were upset that he couldn't sign him when it was made known that he wanted to go into the NFL, that he had to go through the whole draft process.
Yeah.
Like, because they wanted to sign him right away. So that tells you, you know, he may go earlier. He may go early on day two, and people will be shocked. But you got to think of it. Think of it from that perspective. He was a pro, played well in the pro game, you know, what I'm saying? And played in the CFL where the field is wider. Now you put him in a situation where he's got boundaries on the outside, and oh man, like, it's gonna be a lot easier for him. If you can play corner in the CFL, you can play corner anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's what I say. I like about the day three. I always find it the more interesting one, because you get like guys like Quintez, you get the small school guys where you kind of look at them and go, okay, he's played for a small school, Slippery Rock, as you said, for one of them. He played up in Canada. He's actually played for Division III school. You're thinking, okay, he's not really going to forge a decent career. And yet you find those, say, diamond in the roughs that actually then eventually go, yeah, it doesn't matter if you go to Alabama or Slippery Rock or take the pro route as a rookie and come in as a rookie like Quintez, that you can find that guy that makes that immediate impact. And that's what I love about day three and the undrafted aspect of it.
Yeah, it's a great, you know, if you are doing your scouting job correctly, you know that there's guys everywhere. I mean, look at the Rams. They were able to forego first round picks since they moved to LA, you know, and been building their roster based off late round picks and undrafted rookie free agents. Their starting secondary last year was all 6th round picks, you know. So I mean, when you think about that, finding guys, Kobe Turner was a mid, you know, day 2, day 3 pick. So this is what you're supposed to do. And teams that really understand how to evaluate talent and how to, you know, connect fit with need, they do a great job. The draft is fun for them.
Yeah. It's good, because I mean, you've got obviously the pro days and combines, it really highlights what people can do. Because I mean, one guy that I think slept on is Evan Anderson out of FAU, the defensive tackle. Is that Evan Anderson? Am I right? Is that right? Evan Anderson, FAU?
Yeah, I got like 1,000 names in my head.
You're the research guy, Matt. I can't help that.
I can't remember now. But yeah, that guys like that, or guys like Christian Boyd at Northern Iowa, they have those pro days, and then you just see them just explode, and you're thinking, why they got such a low draft grade on, and then they come up and they go, bang, that's the reason why. Yeah, that's the good thing about why the GMs earn the big bucks and the scouts earn the big bucks, because you've got guys like that. And it was Evan Anderson, yes. Yeah, the 3'9" defensive tackle, 3'9", 6 foot, 3'19". Yeah. But no, it's those type of things that it's obviously, if you look at pro, I'm probably rambling on so much, is actually, you're probably thinking, what the hell is he actually talking about now? The fact that you look at these pro days, do you see, can you actually see where the weaknesses are in there? Obviously, they show out on the pro day, and then you're thinking, why are they not higher?
Nah, you don't want to fall victim to what you see in a workout. You know, guys doing 9 football things. You know, you want to see the guy's in shape, how he moves, you know, if he looks the part, you know, and then you got to always go back to the tape. because the tape will tell you everything. You know, yeah, you're fast out here, but do you play fast? You know, yeah, you were able to bench press, you know, 225, 30 times, but do you play strong? You know, and that's what's, you know, what do you do when the pads are on and when the lights are bright and when the game is on? That's the most important thing. All these other things, you know, it's good to have. You're checking boxes, but you better be able to play like those boxes that you checked on the spreadsheet.
So mainly it's obviously pay attention to the combine numbers and pro day numbers, but the main way to actually scout them is look at their game tape, look how they work in actual game pressure situations. That's the best way to really identify in a way where their strengths and weaknesses are and where they can actually improve in the future.
Absolutely.
Cool. How much time does it take? How much, I suppose, investment of time does it take to evaluate a player? I suppose another way of asking it is, how long does it take before you can get a fairly clear picture of the kind of player and where you would sort of rank them as their sort of draft or their just general profile?
For me, it takes, I usually, no more than 3 games. Because outside of that, you start to see what you want to see, you know. And so three games, you should be able to tell what a player is, you know. And that's the barometer I use for all these guys that are great. It's a 3-game maximum. And you just watch, you know, and you study and you just make sure you're – because over the course of 3 games, you have 3 separate, you know, schemes, 3 separate players that they're going up against. 3 different situations in terms of all kind of situations throughout a game. But 3 games to me is anything else is overkill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And going back to, let's say, we know wide receiver is going to be a big need. And we've mentioned the fact that double dip. Are there any like Gabe Davis, Stephon Diggs type players, wide receiver wise? that we can get in the fourth to seventh round and on day 3 that will or could turn into maybe a 1B to if we draft a Brian Thomas as our out and out number one. Is there a guy like that in the later rounds?
I feel like nobody's talking about Xavier Weaver out of Colorado, who was Shedeur Sanders' number one option in the passing game. He is someone that, you know, good acceleration, good quickness, very good hand-eye coordination, makes a lot of tough catches that, you know, no one's talking about him. I don't know where he'll go in the draft, but that's someone that I would definitely keep an eye on because, again, if he was the number one option in that passing game, and they threw the ball around a yard, but when you go back and study him, you're like, wow, he's consistently finding a way to get open. He's working himself back to the football. He's making great plays on the ball at the catch point and showing that he was kind of tough and physical over the middle of the field.
Yeah. And one last thing before we sign off, we know that you love, you do a lot of work on the small school, Division II, Division III. Is there a few guys in there that, again, fit the Bills values and scheme that you feel from these Division II, Division III schools that could make a potential impact and name for Bills fans to look out for in, say, round 6 or 7 or UDFA?
Well, you know, locally, you feel like the Cortland State kid, Cole Burgess, is right there and nearby. You know, he's 5'11", about 195, 4'4". 40, had a great pro day at the Buffalo University of Buffalo pro day. Excellent Division III receiver. Another guy, and you know, guy that played against him in, you know, the Division III National Championship game, and D'Angelo Hardy, 6 feet, about 195. Another one that good catch and run guy. All of those guys to me just need opportunities. They played high level Division III football. You're talking about, you know, national champions on either side. North Central won one 2 years ago. Cortland won one this year against North Central. And both of those receivers, I believe, in that ball game went over 150 yards receiving. You know, so you saw them raise their level of play. They check out physically and athletically, and they've been productive over the course of their career. And I'm pretty sure Buffalo has seen a lot of those guys because they both played in cold weather. So that matters too. You know, playing in, you know, Northern Illinois and also playing in upstate New York. I think those two receivers are, you know, I feel like one will get drafted, but two will definitely, both of those guys will end up on NFL rosters for sure.
That's cool. So, you
mentioned kicker, and it just immediately a few minutes ago, and we've had a couple of issues with our kicker who's on a pretty big contract. Is there anyone? Is the day three kicker that might be of interest?
I haven't studied kickers at all, so that's above my pay grade. I guess like just go
too,
on.
Too tricky aside. Need more than three games to evaluate a kicker, dear.
I would say just go find the guy that
rarely
missed and sign him, and just keep signing kickers and keep kickers on call, because it's more of a mental thing with those guys. Or hell, look at the UFL, the kicker for the Michigan Panthers, Bates. Go get him right now. Right,
yeah,
that's the one that, you know, he could before the spring season is over with, he's probably going to get 70 yards, because he's been the 65, I believe, yarder he hit, the walk off, it could have been good from 70, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's why those spring leagues are good. So he may be somebody that they go out and grab right away. You know, once his game is, he could be the new Brandon Aubrey, who came from the Philadelphia Stars and now has been an All-Pro with the Dallas Cowboys, who seem to love the spring leagues, because you got Turpin as a returner and Aubrey as their kicker. So Bates from the Michigan Panthers, there you go. That's your kicker you should go ahead.
He's happy. He's happy now. No, I mean, Emery, thank you ever so much for coming on the show. Okay. I mean, obviously, names on there that we haven't looked at, and obviously that could grab people's attentions. For everyone that's listening and actually watching, where can they follow all your work and just follow you in general?
Follow me on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. They can subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/footballgameplan. But they can go get the draft guide, man. Listen, over 900 individual scouting reports, the largest draft guide in existence. And they can go get that at footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide.
Awesome. So, Emery, thank you very much for joining me and Robin, and for everyone out there. Make sure you're following Emery. Make sure you actually try and get his draft guide. And for the three of us, we're just saying thank you for listening. And for me and Robin, let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.
Yeah,
no,
not us. You don't know anything about Mark. You don't know anything about work. Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on three. One, two, three. Bills.